Okay, welcome everyone. We find ourselves on Yud Daled Amud Beis. That is on 14B. Toby, thank you for joining in person, and thank you all to who are joining on Zoom. I always say I don't like guilting the people come on Zoom because I'm like, think about all the people who aren't coming in any form. So you guys are already like far above the standard. So shkach everyone, it's good to have you all with us. Previously on Maseches Megillah, we started learning about the Nevi'im and Nevi'os. In particular, we are learning about the seven female prophets or prophetesses. And we went through a number of them last time. And basically, what the Gemara is trying to do is to say, huh, what a novel concept, a female prophetess, a Nevi'ah. Well, let's figure out how did we get to seven prophetesses? And lucky for us, the Gemara doesn't ask it the other question, which is, how do we know that the 48 men mentioned are prophets? Because then that could really go on for a while. So we have Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Chana, Abigail, Huldah, and Esther. So last time on Yud Daled Amud Aleph on 14a, we went through how we knew Sarah was the Nevi'ah, how Miriam was the Nevi'ah, Devorah, Chana. And we left off with Abigail. So that brings us about a quarter way down Yud Daled Beis 14b, where we'll be starting with Chulda. And what do you know? The first word at the beginning of that section is Chulda. So if anyone who has the art school wants to help us, are we on Yud Daled Beis 14b to the first power or 14b squared? Still first, Toby says. But toward the end, that would make sense. So here we go. Chulda. Does anyone know what Chulda means, by the way? It'll be important later on in the Gemara. So God is that, is her Hebrew name Chulda? Okay. Panina, I'm just gonna do a general mute, but you're welcome to unmute if you have a question. Just some background noise coming from somewhere. Okay. See, I don't like to be discriminatory, so I just do a blanket mute. Much easier. So Chulda is a weasel. So I remember when Marissa and I we were talking about baby, names for Talia. We're going through. She's like, "Oh, I'd love to name her after a prophetess, but want it to be unique. Like, there's a million Devorahs and Sarahs out there, but not Chulda." She's like, "Oh no, do Chulda? You don't want to call her a weasel." So we nixed that. So Huldah, how do we know that she was a Nevi'ah? Dechsiv, Vayelech Hilkiyahu HaKohen v'Achikam v'Achbor v'Shafan v'Asiyah. So all of these men came to Huldah the Nevi'ah, and they were sent on behalf of the king, I believe. So that's how we know she's a Nevi'ah. It says pretty black on white. She was a prophetess, and therefore they sought her counsel. Now the Gemara asks, great, we know that she is a prophetess, but there's a bit of a troubling question over here, right? Imagine someone giving you a name of a major halakhic authority. All right, imagine Rabbi Mordechai Willig is here. All right, don't worry. Yeah, there you go, Tony. Imagine Rabbi Mordechai Willig is here. So if Mordechai Willig's in town, and he's sitting, let's say, with us at the table, and I'm sitting at the table. It's very obvious if it's a halakhic question, it goes to Rabbi Willig. It goes to, because you just can't even compare the two of us. So the question is, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, who was like the head prophet of those days, the Gadol Hador. So if he was around, why did they seek the counsel of Huldah over the counsel of Yirmiyahu? First of all, you want to get top tier prophecy for the king. Number two, it's an affront to the honor of Yirmiyahu. So we're going to give two answers. Ami bei Rav mishmei de Rav Chulda kroves Yirmiyah haisa lohava makbid ale. So Chulda was a relative of Yirmiyahu. Okay, shkayach. Who cares if they're relatives? So since Yirmiyahu and Chulda had a warm relationship as relatives, Yirmiyahu didn't see this as an affront to his honor. He let them go to Chulda instead, right? So we were talking about this actually in our morning shiur. We're talking about Agadatas, And there's a sugya that's related to this called Harav Shemacha Kvodomacho or Inok Kvodomacho. But the question is, it's mainly centered, I believe, in Kiddushin. The question is, can a rabbi, a Talmud Chacham, forgo his honor? As we learned in a shiur about a year ago or so, just because someone's a rabbi actually doesn't mean that they're a Talmud Chacham. I hate to break that to you. But the Chavetz Chaim actually comes to the Chavetz Chaim, of course, is a Talmud Chacham, no question about that. He came to the defense of standard pulpit rabbis, and he said, if someone has the title, you have no right to cast aspersions upon them. But anyway, the question that came up is, one of the things you do for Talmud Chacham is you stand up when they come in the room. And so the question is, let's say he wants to be mochel, he waves that privilege, he waves that honor that is due to him, is it effective? And part of the question over there is, well, is it my honor? Or maybe because I teach Torah, I'm a representative of God, I don't have a right to waive God's honor, the Torah's honor, which I am representing. So I haven't looked at the Mefarshim in particular on this line over here, but it'd be interesting to put this in conversation with that larger sugya. How could Yirmiyahu waive his honor and have them go to Chulda? Now, it might not be the craziest thing, because what the din is that when there's a student and a Rebbe that are together, the student is not allowed to render halachic judgment in the presence of his rabbi. But we can easily say, okay, well, Yirmiyahu was living wherever Yirmiyahu was at the time. Chulda was living wherever she was. It wasn't like they were sitting in the same village or at the same table. And they said, Chulda, what do you think before Yirmiyahu? But it'd be interesting to think about that sugya over here. Anyway, the question is, though, okay, good. Yirmiyahu was a very modest, humble person. He was okay with them going to Chulda. But nonetheless, Yoshia gufei hechi shavik Yirmiyahu mishadr legaba. How can Yoshio just ignore Yirmiyahu and go to Chulda? You know, if this is the king and he wants top tier prophecy, he should go to the head of all Navi. He should go to the best Navi that is available to him, which is Yirmiyahu. So why would he opt to go to Chulda? Even if he's allowed to seek Chulda's counsel, why did he choose her over Yirmiyahu? So Amri Devei Rebbe Shila Ibn Shahanashim Rachmanios saying, because women are Rachmanios. What does Rachmanios Rebbe say? Exactly. Thank you, Toby. Women are merciful. So this is something that gets quoted a lot. Now, an interesting question is, but what's going on over here? What's Yoshiyahu seeking? He's not seeking her to sit on a basin, to sit on a rabbinical court, and to render judgment for him. And he's hoping that she might be more sympathetic because, you know, women are nicer than men, apparently. That's what it says here in the Gemara. I guess, yeah, makes sense. Do we agree? No, don't agree? Okay, the Gemara says that. It depends on the person, obviously. So this is what he means. The Maharsha says that, no, Nevuah is Nevuah. Hashem is going to give the same Nevuah, whether to Yirmiyahu or to Chulda. But she is going to go a step further, right? So Yirmiyahu can have a very bad prophecy. Whatever the prophecy is, doom and gloom, that's what Yirmiyahu is known for. And Yirmiyahu could say, all right, well, sorry, told you so. You know, there's a question, not a question, a joke that was going around. Yossi Shiner came to me. So I don't know if you guys realize, there's like a number of people like me who are like former yeshivish people who live here in Stanford. So Yossi Shiner, you guys know Yossi? Oh, okay. Moved in during COVID. No, actually, no, before COVID. All right. So you should meet him. So he's a member of our community. He comes to Minyan every Shabbos, and he's in the weekday Minyanim also. So he went to Chaim Berlin. So he's telling me this joke that's been going around, in which there's a Chabad Chassid, a Breslover Chassid, which is the Rabbi Nachman guys, and a Litvak, you know, just standard yeshivish guy, who they all go to Gehenna, they all go to hell. So Rabbi Nachman comes down and sees the Breslover guy over there. He's like, were you Ivdus Hashem B'Simcha? Did you serve God with happiness every day? Did you grow your payas? He's like, oh, yes, of course. I did the nananachs. He's like, okay, grabs him by the payas, pulls him out of Gehenna. Then the Lubavitcher Rebbe comes and he sees the Lubavitcher Chassid in hell and says, oh, well, you know, do you do Chitas every day? Did you study Tanya? And he says, yes, of course, Rebbe. I always studied it so studiously. So he says, okay, I'll lift you out of Gehenna. He takes him out of Gehenna as well. Then the Litvisha guy, the Yeshivish guy, his Rosh Yeshiva comes and says, told you so. So he went around. He came to me on Shabbos. He's like, I told everyone it would go to Shalmas, and they all just stared at me. And one woman was like, why is Rosh Yeshiva so mean to him? So basically, the joke is like the classic Rosh Yeshiva, like, is giving the Musser. And he's like, I told you you'd burn in hell if you didn't follow the Torah. So that's a mentality. So you got a little bit of like inside how the Yeshiva versus Chassidisha world works in that regard. So anyway, for here, Yoshio were to go to Yirmiyahu, he was afraid he'd be like that Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. He'd just be like, here's a prophecy. You're all going to burn. You're all going to die. Told you so. You should have repented. Which we see Yirmiyahu is actually more merciful and really cares a lot. But okay. So he
wants a question.
Skulda won't just give the negative prophecy. Presumably she would go the next step and actually be Mavakish Rachamim and beseech God on their behalf. That's what it means. Nashim Rachmani is saying here.
Paul. So I have a question. We were always taught not to rabbi shop, especially if you're looking for kulas. So this seems to say, at least for Rab Shaila, that it's okay to rabbi shop.
Yeah, great question, Paul. Great question. So, Paul, this is before your time, but on my interview for Agudah Shalom, my shir was on this topic of Hachacham Sha'asar in Chaveh Rashay Lahatir. That once you go to one rabbi for a psak, you're not supposed to get it overturned by another rabbi. So the reason not to rabbi shop in general, one reason might be is because, you know, halacha is all interconnected. So if you take like a kula from this rabbi and a kula from that rabbi, they might be contradictory kulas that both can't actually live together. They could be a tarti to sasri. The real issue is when one rabbi already tells you, like, let's say you bring a bedika cloth to him and he says, this is tamei, this is dam nida, it's nida blood, and she is tamei, she's a nida now. So then you're not allowed to go to another rabbi for psak. Now, without getting too into the sugya, the question is that I'm not allowed to go to the other rabbi? But if I do, the rabbi could give me an alternative psak? Or is that the second rabbi doesn't have the power to overturn the first rabbi? And it might differ based on if the first rabbi is a superior Talmud Chacham or not. There's a whole number of nafkaminas in that sugya. The question is, can I be mochel and allow the second guy? So it depends. So it's a whole entire shir, which I would love to rehash because I have to review it myself. But yes, there is a concept of rabbi shopping. I think you have to, though, distinguish between what the halacha actually says, the limits halachically, and then like hashkafically, where we've expanded the isser of rabbi shopping too. But there's no reason that you can't go to me for one question and then go to Rabbi Cohen for another question.
But the point here,
yeah, Toby,
seems to be that not that you expect
to answer, according to Maharsha.
Yeah. So that's not the same thing.
Right. Very good. So what Toby is saying to your point, Paul, is like what we just explained based on the Maharsha, that this isn't rabbi shopping per se, because he's expecting to get the same prophecy either way. He just wants her to intercede on his behalf after giving the prophecy, right? It's like, to be a male tzioshir, very good, to intercede on his behalf. So, you know, it's like you could have someone who comes and gives the bad news, or, you know, they could give bad news and say, how can I be of help? So that's the difference. Not to say Yirmiyahu wouldn't, but he just this is what we call, benevolent sexism. That's what they call it these days. All right. Let's go forward, Rabosai. That was answer number one. Why did he go to Yirmiyahu? Why did he go to Chulda? Yirmiyahu was there. Yirmiyahu wasn't Machmed. Yirmiyahu let him. Why did he prefer Chulda? Noshim Rachmani was saying. Now, a second answer, this is like the, what they call the Balapathashe answer. Right? Yohanan Amar, I told you guys about, but I've explained that answer, right? No? Oh, okay. Very briefly. It's another yeshivishism. It's actually a little pejorative. I don't mean it pejoratively when I say it, but usually like the yeshivish way of learning is like the helpful and the thumbs going away and the connect this and that thing. And like the answer can't be that simple, because then it would just be too easy. The Baal Badisha answer means like, oh, you know, we're just like learning through some Gemara. We need pshat. So oftentimes even though they mean it, Right, for Baal Batim. So oftentimes they mean it pejoratively, but oftentimes the Baal Batim answer may just be actually the right answer. Sorry, it's not always a crazy halachic acrobatics to figure things out. So here it is. This is the Baal Batim answer. Right, Yochanan Amar, Yirmiya lo hava hasan. Yirmiya wasn't around. He was busy. That's an easy answer. Yirmiya just wasn't available. Kasha and Maisa. Shahalach lahak. Now, why was he busy? No, he wasn't just on the golf course. Shahalach lahak sir aseres ha-shvatim, right? Remember, we learned how Sancheir came in. He dispersed the 10 tribes. This is back when the kingdom, there was the kingdom of Judah, and there was the kingdom of Israel, and the 10 tribes were in the kingdom of Israel. And the way Sancheir, the way they would conquer kingdoms was, it was very smart. They would basically take the residents of one country and disperse them into other countries so they could never actually mount a rebellion because they'd be so disoriented and they wouldn't be living in their own land. So Yirmiyahu brings them back. Minal Dahadur, how do we know he succeeds? Dechsiv, ki amocher el hamimkar lo yashuv, because there's a prophecy given later on, which you can see, it's the hay over here. It's in Yecheskel prophesies that they will not return back to the land of Israel. Asher Yovel Batel Benavi Misnavi Alav Shegibatel. So this is understood as a prophecy that Yovel will no longer be practiced. Yovel is the Jubilee year, the 50th year. That's when all slaves go free. It's a major milestone. So Yecheskel is prophesying that Yovel will not be practiced in the future. Now, why would Yovel not be practiced? If the Jews are no longer, if most of the Jews are no longer living in Israel, Yovel's not practiced. And many understand, just like Yovel's not practiced, Shemitah's not practiced either. We've talked about this a number of times in the past, that Shemitah, according to many, needs what we call Bias Kulchem. It needs to have the majority of the Jewish people living there. So the idea is, how can Yecheskel threaten with a prophecy saying that you won't observe Yovel in the future because the 10 Shvatim, they'll be dispersed. They will be exiled from the land of Israel. Aren't they already dispersed in the land of Israel? That's a hollow threat. Must be. Yirmiyahu actually successfully brought them back. And then they get threatened that you'll be dispersed again, which I believe is what happens. So Yirmiyahu did successfully bring them back. And then we learn that Yoshio ben Amon actually ruled over them. Even though Yoshio was from the king of Judah, he then had dominion over the 10 Shvatim when they came back. What is this? It's seen as like a gravestone or a marker of some sort, something that sticks out. So Vayomer Elav Anshi Ha'ir, Hakever Ishva Elohim, Asher Ba Mihuda Vikreas Dvarma Ela. So this grave belongs to this man of God who came from Judah, who prophesied regarding the, who declared regarding the Mizbeach, the altar that's found in Beit El. Who cares about Beit El? Beit El was in the territory of Israel, not of Judah. What concerns Yoshiyahu about a temple outside of his territory? So we see from here that Yoshio indeed did rule over that Saras HaShvatim, and it was the 10 Shvatim who returned back and knew their land. They're the ones who told him about the history of the temple, of the altar that was there in Beis Hill. Okay, great. Aranach and Amar Mehacha, Gam Yehuda Shas Katzer Lech Veshuvish Vos Ami. He derives it from that. So we see that the ten tribes actually returned back, and Yirmiyahu was successful. Now, why do we bring this all in? Just to show Yirmiyahu was busy. Yirmiyahu was occupied. He wasn't on the golf course. He wasn't playing tennis. He wasn't grabbing a coffee with someone. Therefore, he couldn't answer the Shaila. But he was doing busy. He was doing important stuff. So, okay, very good. That brings us to the end of this section of the Gemara. We are now done with Chulda for now. We'll get back to Chulda soon. Don't worry. We're about to get to our seventh and final prophetess. I feel like it's like some sort of contest here. Our seventh and final prophetess will be Esther Hamalka. So before we get to Esther, any questions? All right, we get to our finalist. We are up to Esther. Esther, how do we know that she was a prophetess? Dichsiv. Vayhi vayom hashlishi vatilvash Esther Malchus. And it was on the third day that Esther wore Malchus. Esther wore kingship. Honestly, they got a better translation. Archon, like kingship for Malchus. Yeah. Royalty. I like that word better. Thank you. And Esther wore royalty. What, we saw this earlier. What do you mean? Big day Malchus me by the way. Should say she wore royal garments. Ella shalavshta ruach hakodesh. So what's it mean? That she instead wasn't, it's not shown that she was wearing royal clothing. Of course she's wearing royal clothing. She's always wearing royal clothing. But it's that she was wearing Malchus, referring to the divine presence or the divine inspiration of ruach hakodesh. We see the notion of a spirit enveloping someone, and we use the word of levusha, the word of wearing clothing. So too, Esther was enwrapped in the clothing of Ruach HaKodesh, so to speak. Now, some point out that there seems to be a conflation of categories here. Rambam says, have we ever done this? Rambam explains what's the difference between the three parts of the Jewish Bible, Tanakh. We have Torah, Nevi'im, the books of the prophets, and Ksuvim, writings. Torah is the word of God dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu. But what's the difference? What makes what puts something in Sifrei Nevi'im in the books of prophets versus Ksuvim in the books of writings? Is there any meaningful distinction between them? Indeed, there is. You know, if you have a book from Ksuvim and you have a book from Nevi'im, you have a Sefer Yirmiyah, and then you have Rus, you put the Sefer Yirmiyah on top of Sefer Rus. And likewise, you put a Chumash on top of that. So there seems to be some sort of qualitative distinction. And I believe what Rambam says is that Sifrei Nevuah, books of the prophets, are written from prophecy. Whereas Ksuvim is a tier lower, they are written with Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. Tehillim was certainly not dictated to David HaMelech, and it wasn't a prophecy that he got. We know that David HaMelech, when King David was writing Psalms, he struck that special chord, and the divine inspiration flowed in, and it was written with, it's like the electric assist. And if you have like an electric assist bicycle or scooter, it helps you go faster. So that's what he had. Well, David HaMelech could have received Nevuah, but we assume that Tehillim, though, is written with Ruach HaKodesh. I think David HaMelech... Right, but Toby's asking, David HaMelech was not the Navi, Shmuel, Samuel was not. So someone could, not be a Navi by profession, but they could, in theory, still get Nevuah. There were many people, we learned this last week, they got Nevuah just one time, and that was it. So, but their occupation was not a Navi, right? Okay, let's wrap this up. Going forward. Around Nachman, lo ya yihirusa linashe. Yuhara, I think arrogance, I want to get this right. Is that how they translate an article? Arrogance for Yuhara? Haughtiness? Amar of Nachman. Yeah. Lo ya yihirusa linashe. Do they define interesting. So Yuhara is usually arrogance. Interesting that they translate as prominence. Yuhara is not good for women. So Tarti Neshe Yehira Habiyon is Son in Shemayim. There are two women who had a lot of yuhara, whether you want to say arrogance or prominence, and because of that, their names became despised. Chadashma Ziburasa, one of them, their name is a bee, that's Devora, this is in Aramaic. Chadashma Karkushta, and one of them, their name was Karkushta, which Rashi tells us is Chulda, it means weasel, so that's in Aramaic, that's their name. Diburasa, regarding Devora, Sivba, Vatishah, Vatikra, Libarak, Gil'i, Lo Us, Ligabe. So she summoned Barak to her, but she did not go to him. So that's a form of arrogance. Why should I go to you? You should come to me. Karkushta, Sivba, and regarding Karkushta, Chulda, Imru, Le'ish, she said, say to that man, but she did not say, relay that message to the king. So she became very, very arrogant, very pompous based on her office. And this was very problematic. Now, some of the Farshim point out that, wait a minute, we learned this in our Thursday morning shiur this morning. We were talking about, is that everything about Toby? About, was it Yishayahu and, was it Chizkiyahu? Chizkiyahu. Thank you, Toby. Yishayahu and Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So Yishayahu didn't want to go to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu didn't want to go to Yishayahu. And finally, God tells him to go to the king. But we see under normal circumstances, the prophet doesn't have to go to the king.
That's it.
Right, so he went exactly to it. Very good. So he was sick. He was sick. So therefore, Yishayahu had to visit him. But in general, we see from there, presumably, that a prophet is not expected to go out of his way to visit the king. So the question is, what's wrong with what Devorah did? So the answer is, one answer that's given is that Baruch was her, not just the commander, but he was her husband as well. And as we learned, you know, remember when they sent out the letters, Haman had Ahasuerus sent the letters to respect your husbands. They're like, what do you mean, Pshita? Of course we know that. So, okay, we'll leave it as is. Next part of the Gemara. Amar Kulda, Mibnei Barashal Yoshua Haisa, Sifacha Ben Charas, Sifasam Ben Timnas Charas. So we see that Kulda is actually a descendant of Yehoshua because of Gezer Shava, Charas, Charas. So we see over there that Charis is mentioned in the context of Yeshua, and she is Charchas. Isve Rav Eina Sava L'Rav Nachman. Shmon Neviim Behein Kohanim Yatsu Me'Rachav HaZona. There are eight Neviim and Kohanim, and they are Kohanim, who descended from Rachav HaZona. Remember the story, Yeshua, right? They get to Yericho, they scout it out. They see Rachav HaZona, which can mean prostitute or innkeeper or possibly both. The Elohim, so who are her descendants that were prophets that were Kohanim? Neria, Baruch, I forget how to pronounce this, Sharaya, the next thing is up. Achasia, Yirmiah, Chilkiah, and Hanameh. Vishalom, Vishalom, thank you. Rahuda Omer, Avkul, and Neviim, if they benashal, Rachav HaZona, Haisa. Chulda was also descendant of Rachav. Sifacha ben Tikvah, Sifasimus, Tikvah, Skotashani, you see there. So the question is, how can you say she's a descendant of Yeshua when we see we have a lima that tells us she's a descendant of Chulda? So Amar Lei, Eina Saba, Rami La Pasya Ukma, he responds by saying, either, you know, calling him by a nicer title or calling him seemingly by a nice title also, but like a blackened pot. Minach this time, Shmeis the Igra Vinoska Yeshua. So between the both of us, we're actually both right. Eil Veilu Dirlikim Chaim. Both of us are right. What happened was, Rachel converted, she married Yeshua, and so, yes, Gulda is actually the descendant of both of them because they both wedded each other. Ah, mi havali zarli Yeshua. Can she actually be considered a child of Yeshua? Yeshua didn't have any descendants, but Siv, Nun Beno, Yeshua Beno. And then the lineage, when it's counting the lineage, it stops at Yeshua. It doesn't go any further. So, B'nei lo havale, this is classic, right? It's enough many times when it only counts the boys, but as I mentioned, the women, right? That's we presume that, you know, if Cain and Hevel, you know, had did Cain ever have any children? Must be there had to have been another woman around. The Torah just didn't tell us about. He had a twin sister, and we assume that actually with the Shvatim that they all had sisters that went along with them. So many times it happens in the Torah. Yeshua did not have any sons, but Benasin Havale, but he had daughters. And so that's how Rachav came from Yeshua and Rachav. That is an interesting question that Mefarshim asks, which is, how can Yeshua marry Rachav? And first of all, if you understand that she wasn't just an innkeeper, but that she was a prostitute as well, that complicates things even further. Well, let's assume she was just an innkeeper, you know, good non-Jewish, but she's from the seven Canaanite nations. And remember, back during Purim time, we focused a lot of our energies on talking about destroying Amalek, but what about destroying those from the seven nations? Now, if you hold like Rambam, who's fine even with an Amaleki converting to Judaism, then you don't have a question. But what do we do with Rachav? So some try to suggest that maybe she, you know, this is before the ban was actually instituted, but presumably the ban was already in place, that there was a commandment to kill out all the seven Canaanite nations, certainly not to marry one of their members. So I believe it's the, let me check, I think it's the Sfas Emes. Yes, the Sfas Emes says, Kevet Shenishpula Lahatzel Saw Mishpachta V'haysa Shua Piruha Kodesh Haya Mutter Lahashira. So perhaps bringing back in our good old friend, our new concept, Ruach HaKodesh, since Yeshua made an oath to her through God's Ruach HaKodesh to rescue her and to spare her when they conquered the city, that Ruach HaKodesh basically removed the status of a Kenani from Rachav. And when she was no longer a Kenani, it's fair for her to convert in and for Yeshua to marry her. So let's see. What do we got in Tosis here?
Answers it. Rachav was at to not
So basically, she found that there was work, right? Like Toby said, Tosef points out that it's possible she was just trying to find work. She found work in Yericho, but she's not a descendant of the seven nations. Tosis gives another answer, which we mentioned. That's possible that she that the commandment against marrying any of the Goyim was only after they entered into the land of Israel. So they hadn't yet entered in. They haven't even entered Yericho yet. However, he basically brings in the Nesinim, how they were rejected as well when they came to convert in the times of Moshe and Yeshua. Even the Nesinim came to convert in, and they said, no, you could be the water carriers, you could be the wood choppers, but they didn't let them convert in. So the Nesinim couldn't convert in. Why would she be able to convert in? So we have to fall back to the first teretz, that she was not originally of Kenani origin. Or the Sfasemis answer, that she was of Kenani origin, but nonetheless, there was a special exception made for her through Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. You know what? Oh, it's only 7:35. You know what? Let's just go a little bit further onto Tesvav and Menav, because you know these last blot here, they look very intimidating. There's a lot of words on them, so it's always good to know that we made a dent into it before we start next time. So very small piece. You remember before we mentioned that Hulda had 8 descendants who were Kohanim Nevi'im. Now 4 of them we know already, but 4 of them were actually the fathers of them. So the question is, so we know it says very obviously that Yirmiyahu was a prophet, but his father Hanamel, is that his father? I think so. So correct me if I'm wrong. So his father, it doesn't say he was a Navi. So how do we know he was a Navi? It doesn't say in the Pesukim. When it says someone was a Navi, Ben so-and-so, it means to say that he came from perhaps a line of the VM. Certainly his father was a Navi as well. Maybe not as famous, maybe not as prestigious, but he also was a Navi. Shmo v'lo shem aviv, b'yadua shu Navi v'lo ben Navi. So when it only mentions a prophet, but doesn't mention the prophet's father's name, it just means that only the prophet himself is noteworthy, but his father was not a Navi. Shmo v'shem Iro, when it mentions a person and his city, Mefurash, explicitly, Yadua Shume Osa Ir. So when we see that says so and so was from such and such city, oh, guess what? They're from such and such city. Shmo v'loshem Iro, however, let's say it doesn't tell us where somebody's from. Yadua Shume Shalayim, and then we presume by default that they're from Jerusalem. Final piece. So it's just interesting. Like when you read Tanakh, now you like think about that. So you know a little bit about where people are from. The Masnisa Tana. So one final brisa. Kol shem ma'asav ma'isa vosav sesumen. So in general, when we don't know much about a person or about his father's actions, upar lecha kosu be'echman l'shvach, but the pasuk goes out of its way to praise that one individual. Gagon, Daber, Dvar Hashem, Asher Haya, El Tzafania, Ben Kushi, Ben Gedalia, Beyadua, Ashu Tzadik, Ben Tzadik. So when it goes out of his way to say, oh, the word of God came to this person, so we see he's a good person, so we know that his father also was a good person. But likewise, the other side of the coin, Bechol Sheparlecha, Kosev, Echmehem, Leganai, when the pasuk goes out of its way, and the one thing it tells you is Leganai is something negative, Gagon, Vayhi, Bechol Sheshvi, this guy came to and kill Gedaliah. It was the worst act ever done because now we have some Gedaliah, right? So that it was such an evil act. No one cares that Gedalia died. We just care we have it sewn now because of that. The Adua Shu Rasha Ben Rasha. So since it says that one thing about him, we know that not only was he a Rasha, but he was a Rasha Ben Rasha, Rasha the son of Rasha. And we'll leave it off over there. And don't worry, we're not done with the Nevios just yet. So for all those who like to learn about women and the Bible and all that kind of stuff, I hope you're enjoying. And if you're not into that, I hope you're joining us anyway. All right. Shkoach, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you for coming. And Ez Hashem, we'll be learning together next week. All right. And for those who I don't see before, and have a wonderful Shabbat. What's on Monday night? I think I will have regular shiur Monday night. Okay. Well, we'll see each other when we see each other. Take care, everyone. Have a good Shabbos.